And there's that rare harmonica.
Don't get many Eddie Vedder harmonica solos.
Is that Eddie on the harmonica?
I believe it is Ed on the harmonica.
Now, I mean, I knew the guy does the ukulele, but I didn't know he could play harmonica.
No, he can definitely use the mouth harp.
Well done, Eddie. Well done. We talked about this on the last show, the No Code album. But I'm getting ahead of myself. It's only the second show. People don't know who we are. Hi, I'm Jeremy, and that guy's Travis.
Hi.
And we're doing this unofficial Pearl Jam fan podcast because we're big nerdy fans and we really like the band and we want to talk about them.
What's the name of our podcast, Jeremy?
It's called Evil Little Goats.
And why is that nerdy Pearl Jam-ish?
It's a secret now. You got to go back and listen to the first one.
Okay, fair enough. For those of you who are too lazy to go back and find the first one, it's a Pearl Jam B-side.
It's a song.
It's a song. Yeah.
You might have heard it.
Those of you who aren't probably nerdy Pearl Jam fans.
Right. So. Those of you that aren't dorks like us. But this is one of the No Code songs that I rather enjoy. It's a good one. But No Code, not one of my favorite albums. But for you, that's a high point in the Pearl Jam career.
It is. It's very much. Well, I have emotional connection to the record.
Should I get you a tissue?
No, okay. I'm fine. No, my lovely wife, her favorite song is Smile by Pearl Jam. And see, No Code happened during the era when I wasn't paying a lot of attention to the band.
Okay.
And it wasn't just because, you know, they weren't getting radio play. It was just other stuff. You know, you're in your late teens, early 20s, graduating high school,
right,
doing stuff that...
Life takes over.
Yeah. So, you know, that era of Pearl Jam, I didn't pay much attention to. I picked up I skipped No Code and I picked up Yield. Like in 98 when Yield came out, and I didn't even really know No Code existed.
Okay.
And then I met my wife, and then she told me about No Code, and I was like, oh, what is this? And then I listened to the record, and I was like, well, this is very different. And it took me a little while, but it just feels like that's the album where, I don't know, I feel like they grew the most by making that record, because it's so different compared to the first three records.
See, and I think for me that is a hard part of this album. One, I said last time that this was the Neil Young era. This is when
hence the harmonica on Smile.
Yeah, everywhere they went, Neil Young came out and they played Rockin' in the Free World together, and a huge, huge Neil Young influence. Based on my opinion, I
think it's a valid opinion to have.
You know, Eddie didn't tell me that. He didn't say, oh, well, I've been hanging out with Neil Young too much, so that's why
I think he calls him Uncle Neil.
Uncle Neil, yeah.
Let's be real here. Come on, because we're the insiders.
Right, we know everything or nothing. But for me, this was the highlight of, I'd been waiting, I think this was their fourth album?
Yes.
I'd been waiting three albums to return to the magic of 10, to get back that kind of magical, I don't even know what it was, just the echo and everything that first album had. I kept looking for them to get back to those kind of almost bluesy roots. And Versus was kind of like angrier and different. And then Vitalogy was just like way too much acid. And then they just slowed way down with No Code. And I was like, I'm still angry. I'm not 40 yet.
Calm down.
I'm still angry.
Down there. Calm down over there, man.
They weren't angry. They were settling in. And that was hard for me.
I don't think they're... See, the money makes you not angry. By the time No Code came out,
they were
bajillionaires.
Yes.
Yeah, so they had nothing to be angry about. But they did realize that they could still fight the good fight. They could still stick up for the little guy. They could still, you know, be a voice of the hapless youth. You know, so they didn't necessarily ditch their roots in that regard, but they definitely didn't write Porch Part 2.
No, they didn't. And I think after this, they even started, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but I want to say that they started getting really political too.
Yes. But they were always political. I mean, MTV Unplugged 92, Eddie Vedder writes pro-choice on his arm.
Totally. You know? But I think it wasn't as obvious as when you get to what was it, Riot Act with Bush Leaguer. I mean,
yeah,
when it was just hit you over the head with the politics, to some degree, they were the voice for an angry group of people, but they were no longer the rock band that I fell in love with.
Right, and I think part of that is because they started doing it more for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like a song like Bush Leaguer, you know, I mean, if you're going to be a rock band that plays in rural Kentucky or, you know, some red state, you're not gonna write Bushleaguer.
Right.
You know, you're gonna be all about guns and pickup trucks and Confederate mm-hmm. flags and such.
Sure.
So they definitely started to do things like, hey, we have opinions, we're adults, and you know, the label's gonna like it because we make the money no matter what.
And
so
I imagine,
this is what we were releasing.
I imagine they felt a responsibility as having a voice and having a platform to deliver a message. How could you not feel that weight and want to react, I guess?
Yeah, but they still weren't angry about it. They weren't angry about having that weight.
They
embraced it, and then
right.
they weren't like, ah, damn it, I don't want to be. They weren't Kurt Cobain,
right?
You know, they weren't. I don't want this responsibility. I guess Eddie in the beginning was like that when he shied away from stardom.
But I mean, from what we saw in the movie PJ20, it seemed like that carried on even through like Binaural was when they finally kind of realized, hey, this is the band we are, and we need to cope with that.
Yeah, for sure. And then once they locked in on that, they more or less are the band that's making music now.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, what do you think about the band now? What is it? I mean, we're a fan podcast, so we're talking about what it's like to be Pearl Jam fans, and this is a very interesting intersection in Pearl Jam's career.
Yeah.
In that they're almost all in their 50s or close to reaching 50.
Mm-hmm.
They've been playing music together in some form or another for almost 22, maybe 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've hit their pinnacle, they hit their peak early. They're able to maintain their relevance, but they did it by like playing shows, by being good to their fans, by being true to themselves. But now we all grew up with the band, so it's kind of like, for me, I want more from the band than what they're giving me. But I also respect that they don't have to give it to me if they don't want to. It just tears me up a little bit inside. Like I get really conflicted by it. That's my fandom. Is like I feel like I don't feel like they owe it to me, mind you. Because I feel like I've gotten more than everything I could want from Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
But I feel like as the fan in me just wants them to give me more. But the adult in me, is like, hey, you know what? They've made their money. They can do whatever they want. They are business.
Right.
They can go and play Ontario, London, or London, Ontario, and they can go play in Wrigley Field, and they can skip Seattle for 2012 or 2013.
Yeah. See, it's hard because ultimately what ends up happening to me is, you know, I'll sit here and I'll read this and I'll see that they're, you know, only selling the record exclusively through Target or whatever nonsense, like whatever like business thing that makes sense for them financially. But as a fan and as the you know, Ticketmaster hating activist, you know, 20-year-old in me, that guy gets offended reading that stuff. And then the album will come out and I go, it's so good. I can't stay mad at you. It's so good. It's a new album. And then, you know, I'll listen a little more critically and I'll find like five songs that I'm like, that one's fine. I'll skip that one. I don't need to hear that one. But then, you know, I'll come around and I'll listen all the way through and I'll fall in love with the music all over again. But I have a hard time because so much of my, I guess, affection for the band is kind of what we talked about in the last show, is this weird friendship that I feel like I've built with them as a fan. And when you read things, you know, from the band that, you know, was all about the little record store and fighting Ticketmaster and doing all that stuff, to then, you know, when they're releasing their own record and they have a sweet deal through Target, which was like a pretty conservative brand that kind of goes against a lot of what they seem to have been for so long, I start kind of going, at what point did this stop being something about the art and about expression and turn into a business? And that stuff starts to kind of not sit well with me.
Well, and it's the whole, you know, commerce versus art, or when art becomes business, conversation that's held throughout every single, you know, throughout every single discipline of art.
Yeah.
You know, from dance to theater to music. You know, it's like, when it becomes a business, is it still art?
Right.
You know, and I would argue from the artist's point of view, it's always art. But at the same time, you know, you have to. We're not calling Pearl Jam sellouts.
No.
But it's definitely a very
It's too close to that for me to be comfortable with, though.
It's almost a hypocritical move.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't begrudge them for, well, they've got their own record label, so they can do whatever they want. You know, at the time when they did Backspace, or things like Kickstarter and such didn't exist. Not mm-hmm. that Pearl Jam, we needed to do a Kickstarter. Right. But so they essentially, I don't know if they shelled out their own money to make the record, but, you know, they had their own label, so they made the record. They could do whatever they want with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've gone the major label route. They've done that for their entire career. And they're like, you know, this Target is as big of a record chain as Tower Records didn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there weren't any major record stores out there.
Yeah.
You know, so like Target's as big as Best Buy, if not bigger. And so let's get all our records in a Target and we'll get an exclusive deal and we'll make bank.
And I get that, but it's, I think because I know enough about what Target, you know, stands for politically and all that, it's hard for me to see them getting in bed with them.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it would have been nice even if they did a, you know, for the first, I mean, and here's my ignorance of the music business. I don't know if this influences, you know, the charts or whatever, but if they made it available at Easy Street for a week or something, and then it was a massive Target deal or what, I don't know.
Well, to touch on that, it was available at independent record shops at the same time it was available at Target. You did not have to go to Target. Was the only place, the only major commercial hub where you could get the record. You could go to Easy Street, you could go to Sonic Boom, you could order it online off of Amoeba. You know, you could get the record from an independent retailer.
Well, that puts a little bit of antiseptic on the sting, I guess. But and this is the part, and please, if anyone with the band is listening, don't hold Travis accountable for this. This is all me. This is all. I shouldn't even
take the bullet. Throw yourself under the bus for me.
It's all me with this one. But it was just kind of the timing of, you know, we're going to do this exclusive deal and to like defend Target. And, you know, we really think that they're a good company and yada, yada. And I, you know, I don't know any of these guys personally. They're not my friends. I can't pretend to know what's going on in any of their lives personally. But at the same time, like Eddie had like remarried a supermodel and they got married in Hawaii. It was just like all of a sudden the rock stardom hit them probably 20 years too late. You know, I mean, they should have been awash in all of this success in 1993 or whatever, but they resisted it and fought. And it felt like at some point that wall finally collapsed and they went, okay, yeah, we're a big deal. We'll
embrace that we've, you know, sold records.
Yeah.
And see, this is what it's like being a Pearl Jam fan. We're talking like a modern day Pearl Jam fan, like the current state of the band that they're in, because they're not releasing new material. They're not playing shows. So we're talking about news that's almost 4 years old.
Right.
With their Target deal.
Right, exactly.
Which still upsets us,
right,
one of us at least, more than the other, but about a band that we love so much.
Yeah.
That they could do something 4 years ago, and we're still going to go crawling back to them.
Of course.
They're open arms. You know, come back, Pearl Jam. We love you. You know.
No, as soon as the album's available on Google Play, I'm going to download it, and I'm going to listen to it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Unless it sounds like Olé.
We won't talk about Olé right now. I'm having too much fun doing this to discuss Olé. So, no, it's very much an interesting time for Pearl Jam because, you know, like we talked about before, that there's reportedly a single coming out July 16th called Mind Your Manners, of all things. Mm-hmm. Makes me think of Billy Kwan. You know Mind Your Manners?
Oh,
Billy,
yeah,
Kwan?
That's right.
Almost Live reference.
Not that they'd know because they don't hang out in Seattle anymore.
Yeah, no kidding. But it's kind of, you've got a new song and you got two shows so far this year. Back in February, 10 Club teased, or when they announced the Wrigley show, they said, or no, they announced they're playing Voodoo Fest in New Orleans. The last date of their fall U.S. tour is Voodoo Fest, which is November 1st. So,
how much of a tour are they doing?
So check this out. It's a fall tour. So they're playing Wrigley in London, Ontario. July, like the week of July 19th.
Okay.
And then there's Voodoo Fest, which is the last, according to the band's website, the last show of the fall tour. They haven't announced the fall tour, but Soundgarden, which Matt is a part of, is performing in Europe through the middle of September. So I'm thinking they're playing select dates, like three city stops, like in like maybe Charlotte, North Carolina, or like just naming a random city, like Jacksonville, Florida, where the states are closer together on the East Coast.
Right.
And they're doing like, you know, two shows a week for like 3 or 4 weeks, and that's their fall tour. And then I assume, and this is all, you know, theorizing and this is all hypothetical, but I assume that there's a record coming out either at the end of this year or fall of this year And then there's going to be either a winter tour or a big summer tour next year. Or maybe they won't tour like they used to, because they used to be like Dave Matthews Band, and they'd go on these summer tours that would go around the country, and you'd be able to see Pearl Jam every single year in the summer.
Yeah, well, and the last time I saw them was Key Arena, but I think the one prior to that was The Gorge.
Right.
Did you see them at The Gorge?
I saw all three shows at The Gorge. I saw 2 in 06 and 1 in 05.
Did they? See, now I want to say there was like a 10-year period where they didn't play The Gorge because something went haywire.
I don't know why they didn't. Oh, yes. I kind of know. This is like hazy Pearl Jam memory, and I don't know if this is actually true. But they played The Gorge with Neil, with Uncle Neil, and I want to say maybe 95, 94. And reportedly, there was so much, like everybody, this is before The Gorge was as big of a deal as it is now. The Gorge is a major concert destination now.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently people just rushed down from, there was fences up on the hill to block, you know, the GA from the standard from or the seated from the GA on the floor.
Yeah.
And all the people on the hill just rushed down, crushed the fences. There was not enough security, and it became a big clusterfuck.
You're right.
Is that true?
I'm Googling according to the Seattle Times. Hour and a half show. They played with Blind Melon.
Okay.
And Neil Young and Booker T and the MGs. Audience members tore down two metal fences. Some people ran and slid down a 25-foot drop and hurled themselves past guards in an effort to rush the stage. 100 people treated for minor injuries, according to the doctor at the medical center. Several people with broken bones. 5 were taken to hospitals in Moses Lake and Wenatchee. 5 were arrested for disorderly conduct and trespassing.
Hmm.
That's
why they hadn't played The Gorge in so long.
Yeah.
And they returned in 05, a Labor Day weekend, and it was like 109 degrees. It was ridiculously hot. But it was abso-fucking-lutely amazing.
Was that the one where the same weekend Tom Petty was playing?
Yes.
That was 05?
That was 05.
Okay, now that's the one that I went to where my wife ended up in the hospital in Quincy. She was one of 2 patients treated at the hospital.
Heat exhaustion?
No. So
she drank Eddie Vedder's coffee. She put something in Eddie's coffee.
The poison finally took its hold. we went to The Gorge. We hadn't been in a long time. I think the last show we'd seen at The Gorge was like Lilith Fair. So super mellow, you know. And again, we were going at a time when Pearl Jam was kind of old. I mean, they're still pushing 40, and they're, you know, kind of a slower, older crowd you expect. And we got there, and we like strategically picked a place where like there was kind of a fence on one side, and the car could kind of be the wall on the other side, and we could set up our tent between the two, and we're guarded on both sides. In the middle of the night after the show, we hear this group of guys kind of, you know, walking around making a bunch of noise, and they decide, you know, hey, what the heck? It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Let's play some football.
Why not?
Yeah. So we hear them line up. They snap the ball. And you just hear footsteps and rumbling until all of a sudden they tackle each other onto our tent, and the whole tent kind of tumbles, and we're just kind of lost in this mess of blanket and sleeping bag and tent, and my wife is waking up going, what the butter? Like yelling, and I'm just trying to like keep calm with like what is even happening. She rips open the tent, stands up in her flannel head to toe, breakfast item covered pajamas, saying, whose ass do I have to kick? Because when they landed on our tent, one of the dude's knee landed on her neck, and she was asleep.
Ouch.
Yeah, so she's asleep, lands on her neck, and we just tumble. And by the time we'd gotten out, they'd scattered. I mean, we both stood up, we're looking around, and couldn't find anybody other than other people that were just hanging out. So now the tent's broken. It's 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and there's nothing we can do, so we have to pack up. We got to leave. We got to drive home because our tent's busted. And so we went and dealt with security, and they went to try to find the guys, and they couldn't or whatever. But they said, you know, you need to be checked out. Do we need to call an ambulance, or can you drive yourself to the hospital? So we drove her there, and they checked her out. And she had some, like, kind of a minor sprain. They gave her some pain meds, and she was fine. The other person treated at The Gorge that weekend was, I believe, a 12-year-old girl who was treated for contact marijuana high.
Oh, no, not the evil marijuana.
Yeah. So some young girl was also. So we were the 2 patients at the hospital at that show.
That's hardcore.
Yeah. So we're never going to The Gorge again.
Yeah. I mean, I would go back to The Gorge if Pearl Jam played. I would. I mean, that's like a dream thing is for Pearl Jam to play The Gorge again. But you never. I could see Like, I always wonder what the future of the band's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think about, it's interesting because you have all these memories of the band as we knew it in the 90s and what drew us to the band as fans. And that's like what we want to recapture with the current era of the band. But we also realize that that's kind of impossible.
Right.
But we want to get as close as possible to that as we can. But then I also think about like what the future of the band is. And there's really no... there's no roadmap for being an old rock star. Like, they could follow what Neil Young does. They could follow... They're kind of doing it on their own, which is, like, I could see, you know, 10 years from now, them playing, like, a... because they're classic rock now.
Right.
But they're really going to be classic rock 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see them, you know, playing seated shows at Key Arena or the Gorge, like Leonard Cohen or something, and just doing like acoustic unplugged or like an evening with Pearl Jam, which they do.
I saw the Benaroya Hall show.
Yeah, no, that was an amazing show.
That was a great show.
That show made me cry.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't see a reason that they would ever have to break up at this point. I think that they just exist, even if it's they record an album every 2 or 3 years, they play 5 shows that summer. Like, they don't need to do anything other than whatever they want. And, you know, eventually be REM and, you know, and break up even though nobody's heard from them in 10
years. Or be AC/DC and just show up every once in a while and then just go away.
Yeah.
You know, like AC/DC, they're never going to tour again. They're never going to release an album. They're in their 70s.
Yeah.
You know, they could if they wanted to, but they're not going to be the Rolling Stones. You know, they're not going to go out and charge $350 a ticket for, you know, select tour dates and stuff like that.
Yeah. But I don't see any reason that they would ever... stop being Pearl Jam unless death falls on one of them or something.
Well, for sure. And also, if you look at what the individual band members are doing now, you know, you look at Eddie doing his pansy stuff with his ukulele, which is very beautiful. And I don't know if you ever got to see an Eddie solo show with a uke, but it's...
No, I did not.
I honestly am not a big fan of his ukulele music.
Yeah.
But I saw him at Benaroya twice, and it was amazing both nights.
I've seen him, like, at Pearl Jam shows. He'll do a couple of songs with the ukulele, and he's quite good.
But you have each of the individual members doing so many different things. Mike McCready is in 95 places at once, it seems like. Mm-hmm. He's showing up all over the place in Seattle. Jeff Ament, you know, just played with Random, and they're releasing another record eventually, and he's got a new band. Stone has a solo record coming out. We should definitely work that Stone interview in somewhere.
Totally.
I talked to Stone Gossard, everybody.
Yeah.
How cool is that? and then you've got, who are we missing? Matt.
Matt's with Soundgarden.
Matt's with Soundgarden. And then Boom, within the last couple of years, released a record with Boom and the Po' Boys, which is like a 4-song EP you can buy off Pearl Jam's website. It's ukulele Hawaiian music, I think.
Okay.
So you have like... they're all doing so many different things, and it just seems like that affords them the ability to maintain Pearl Jam.
If I can sidetrack for just a minute, the new Soundgarden record, what'd you think?
I liked it.
Yeah?
I like it a lot.
I think it's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, especially for a band that hadn't played together in how many years?
Yeah, there are a couple. Lyrically, I'm not a big fan of some of Chris's lyrics, but, you know, it's still a really... It's loud. It's Soundgarden. It doesn't sound like they're just doing it to make money. It sounds like they're doing it because they want to do it, and they know, and there's fire. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of the frustration, getting back to the original thing. For me, like, if Soundgarden can still sound like Soundgarden did 15 years ago, where's the modern day 10 record?
Well, here's the thing with that. In 1997, Soundgarden went away. So their last record, was it Down on the Upside, maybe? Whatever their last record
correct
was.
Correct us if we're wrong.
Yeah, if you listen to King Animal, and or if you play their last record, then you listen to King Animal. There's honestly a natural progression. They sound like they fit together.
Uh-huh.
It's the same band, same people. They're kind of going in the same musical direction. A little bit older, a little wiser, a little bit louder, mm-hmm. but a little less poppy. But whereas Pearl Jam never went away, so they've had all these ebbs and flows in their careers. They did No Code. They Backspacer was supposed to be their big like divergent punk record compared to Avocado, which is a little bit it's like more of like a binaural era kind of sound.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been able to go up and down and kind of fluctuate their sound while still maintaining a Pearl Jam-ness, that certain Pearl Jam je ne sais quoi. That's there.
What's
so,
hard though?
So
is
they
think...
can't go back. They can't go back to being 1992 Pearl Jam because there was never a disconnect. There was continuity. Soundgarden could go back to being 1997 Soundgarden because they didn't do anything in between.
Well, but Cornell went off and did Audioslave, and the other guys, I'm sure, did other things.
Right.
That
Matt joined Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
That's kind of a
well,
big deal.
Matt, yeah, that sort of thing. But I think what's hard for me is if you did take 10 out of the equation, that's a very different band. I think that it's so front-heavy with just amazing. I mean, that whole record, just front to back, is unmatched. It's so beautiful and so well done. And then there's so many kind of hits and misses after that, that I think that if you take that kind of masterpiece away, it allows for a little bit more forgiveness for this and that. When I think that first one set the bar so high for me.
Definitely.
Is what it comes back to for me.
And for a lot of people, I mean, Pearl Jam lost fans after, it wasn't just the Ticketmaster thing that they lost fans over. They lost fans kind of when No Code came out.
Mm-hmm.
Or even with Vitalogy. Versus was a very much an adequate follow-up to 10.
Yeah.
It was angry. It was loud. It was still, they were striking while the iron was hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were still the number one band in the world. I guess Nirvana was probably up there too.
Yeah.
But, and even when Vitalogy came out, it was a logical follow-up, a little bit weirder. Definitely. But then kind of the No Code era and forward, it just wasn't the same.
Yeah.
They seemed, their music was getting older, or not older, but their music was evolving as they were getting older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that now, well, even as I say it, I doubt it. Cause I feel like they are trying, somewhat in the last couple of albums to return to a little bit more of that punk, that angry thing, and it almost doesn't feel right now. I almost want them to be slowing down now because they're older, and I wanted that rebellious, angry stuff sooner.
Yeah, and you know, I have an interesting aside, the tangent, I guess, is you were mentioning getting older, and then we were going to talk about live versus recorded,
yes.
But we went on a whole different route, which
right.
is completely fine. We'll talk about that another day. But one of my theories, and this isn't just my theory, is that the reason they don't tour as much is because of Eddie's voice.
Oh yeah,
he's getting older. He can't be singing like he's in his 20s now.
No, absolutely,
or in his 30s even. Like it's like they play select shows, and if you listen, the last boot I downloaded was the Missoula, Montana boot, which I would like to play something from. But if you listen to that bootleg. From I think it was last year's John Tester show when they played at University of Missoula, it sounds impeccable. The band is just on it. It just sounds so good. If every Pearl Jam show sounds like that from now until the next 10 plus years or whatever, I'm okay with them only playing two or three times in a year, as long as one of those shows is in Seattle.
Is that what we have here? Is that the
Kick Out the Jams with Mark Arm actually
right
singing?
Now! Public service announcement approved by Mr.
Right
Mark.
Now, right now, Missoula, Montana.
You're not going to hear Eddie's voice
right
a lot
now,
on this, by the way.
For Senator John Tester. Right now, it's time to kick out the jams, motherfuckers!
His voice is holding up there.
Well, and that's just, I was just the band as a whole. I mean, they're playing with Dan Peters and Guy and Steve Turner as well. So it's more of a, like, they're playing with Mudhoney as part of Pearl Jam.
Right.
But it sounds so goddamn good.
Oh, totally.
It's like they're on fire, and I assume that's the last. I think that's the last song of the set. But it kills me if all their shows were at this much intensity nowadays. Sign me up.
Yeah. And you know, the price tags they've been climbing, and you know,
the last time Pearl Jam played Seattle, it cost me $86.50. I always as a journalist
for one ticket?
For one ticket.
Oh.
And that was for Lower Bowl, and I think all the tickets were that price actually. It was Lower Bowl behind the soundboard at Key Arena.
I remember when Eddie said shouldn't you be able to go to a concert with $20 and see your band and walk away with a t-shirt?
$20 won't even get you a t-shirt, man.
That was 20 years ago, but yeah. Whatever. Have you ever heard Jay Moore, the comedian? Have you ever heard his impression of Eddie Vedder?
No, I have not.
Would you like to?
I would love to.
The radio show Opie and Anthony caught Jay Moore in the elevator on the way up to do their show, and he does it pretty spot on. Let me see if I can pull this up.
Everybody, welcome to. Don't close on Opie. It's very important. This is the elevator. You hit L for lobby, but L could mean love. It could mean life. This is daughter. Elevators make the world go up and down, literally, not figuratively, huh? OPTV, I like what you're doing. It's really good. It's great work. Jeff, are you ready? Jeff's ready. Are you guys ready? Yeah, because if it takes all night, that's all right, you know? This is a woman behind the counter in a small town. Now we've reached our destination. Thanks for flying Pearl Jam. We appreciate that very much. You've given us a great life.
Wow. That's terrific. That is like, that's spot on Ed, too.
Thanks for flying Pearl Jam. You've given us a great life. So good.
That's kind of like, I feel like Jay Moore was channeling Ed specifically to tell us that.
Right.
Because, you know, they're gracious to their fans, and they know that without people like us, they probably would still make lots of money. but we like to think that we have something to do with the band's success.
Exactly. So. Oh, God. Well, I think we're out of time.
Yeah, let's wrap this up.
Should we go out with another one?
Yeah, your dealer's choice, man.
Dealer's choice, yeah. Wow. Well, I'm curious, maybe this is a teaser for our next show. You said one of these is your favorite Pearl Jam song.
Yes.
Should we play that one?
Why don't we start that?
Well, thank you again for listening to the Evil Little Goats podcast. If you found this somewhere other than Gorilla Candy, now we have there's a Tumblr page that we're
there's
on,
a
right?
Tumblr on the GorillaCandy.com homepage. That's GurillaCandy.com. For those of you who can't spell Gorilla Candy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's a Tumblr icon on the Gorilla Candy homepage that'll take you to Gorilla Candy's Pearl Jam Tumblr, which is called Pearl Jambler. And so that'll be there.
So go ahead and subscribe to that if you're a Tumblr
user. If you're
a
Tumblr. You can also, you'll find it if you subscribe to Gorilla Candy's RSS feed. Eventually, we'll maybe get fancy and upload this stuff to iTunes or something.
Yeah, totally. We'll get there.
And also, there will be information on how to contact us, because if you want to voice your opinions, let us know how we're doing.
Correct us on how wrong we are.
Yeah, definitely correct us. There'll be an email address, which I have somewhere that
we'll
I
hook up a voicemail too, so people can call and just yell at us.
Wow, okay,
that's fun. That's easy.
Yeah, that's a good. Can we do that through Google?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. Right. So, and in case you haven't made the connection, Gorilla Candy is Travis. Travis is Gorilla Candy.
He's more or less behind it. Yeah, it's me.
And you can find more of me in a far less appropriate manner at thesiblingrivalry.com. That's my other podcast that I've been doing for a few years. And so thanks to anyone that's given this a chance, and please spread the word, because that's the only way these things catch on. So if you're a Pearl Jam fan, join us. We'll try and do this every week.
We're all
in
this together, guys.
Yeah. Through the heartache and the pain.
Yes.
The elevator takes you up and it takes you down.
Thank you for flying Pearl
Jam
Air.
Pearl Jam Air. All right. We will go out with Travis's favorite Pearl Jam song, which we'll talk more about why it's his favorite song on the next show, if we remember. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Like an angel flying over your house, like an angel.
see or tortured, and all I cannot do, tortured, all I should have done, tortured, while I occupied a man.
I'm not believing what was promised. I am far from glorified. Oh, I'm not dying. Oh, I'm not alone. Mine is not a celestial state with idle hymns of praise. Time is short, I have an appointment at noon.
Everybody, welcome to... Don't close on OB, it's very important. This is the elevator. You hit L for lobby, but L could mean love, it could mean life. This is daughter. Elevators make the world go up and down, literally, not figuratively, huh? OPTV, I like what you're doing. It's really... It's great work. Jeff, are you ready? Jeff's ready. Are you guys ready? Yeah, because if it takes all night, that's all right, you know. This is a woman behind the counter in a small town. Now we've reached our destination. Thanks for flying Pearl Jam. We appreciate that very much. You've given us a great life.